I honestly, many times I've said, okay, here's what I would do if I were you. Get this IRA or Roth IRA set up at Vanguard and just put your head down and pedal into the wind. Just keep spending less than you make. Keep investing. You get crazy pullbacks like this, and you do have to keep piling in.
That's Grayson Geiler, a retirement planning specialist with Secure Estate Solutions.
Just the last 2 months have been a real wake-up call for people. If you've got retirement in the crosshairs, you need to start planning for it. Things have changed a lot. Volatility in these markets has gotten just so absurd that if you don't plan for it, you may end up having to work longer than you want. And obviously, that's a challenge for a pilot.
Today, we'll discuss what pilots need to know about saving for retirement. Whether you're just starting your career as an SIC on a citation or a 787 captain getting ready to retire. Then, Ted calls in to give us some straight talk and share a story from his flight instructing days.
You're on 121.5, the emergency frequency.
Welcome to the 21.5 Show, a podcast for professional pilots by professional pilots. Join Dylan and Max, both with experience in flight instruction, the airlines, and business aviation, as they talk to a variety of industry experts, share stories, and have a little fun along the way.
Hey, everybody. I'm Max. Welcome back to the 21.5 Show. As always, I'm joined by my co-host, Dylan.
Hey, guys. It's the podcast. Four professional pilots by a couple of professional pilots. Got a good show for you today. Looking forward to it. The return of Ted.
Yes, and the much-awaited return of Straight Talk from our friend Ted.
That's right.
Who everybody, much to our chagrin, really loves.
That's right. Actually, we did get an email that said they didn't like him. First one.
Oh.
So, yeah, it's good. Keep him in check.
Very rare. Few and far between, unfortunately.
That's right. Well, let's kick things off by recognizing our sponsor, Harvey Watt Insurance. They are the largest provider of loss of medical license insurance to professional pilots. Over 75,000 pilots are covered, pretty much every major airline and lots of the big corporate operators as well. Also, Harvey Watt, they do life insurance, and I've got a policy for myself. It's really great if you're a pilot because there are really no exclusions except suicide, which is removed after 2 years. So, you know, a lot of life insurance policies don't let you fly your own GA aircraft. That's an exclusion on there, but not the Harvey Watt policy. So check it out. It's harveywatt.com to learn more. All right. Today, Max, we've got a couple good things to discuss.
We're more than a couple.
Yeah. We're recording this mid-April in 2020, which is a crazy year. If you're listening to this far off in the future, go look at the stock market charts and you'll know why we're talking about the 401k today.
Yeah, it's definitely a relevant subject right now, but the information contained is relevant all the time, no matter what the condition of the market or the economy. So 401k should be a long-term investment, not super affecting your decision-making in the short term. So we talk about good long-term strategies with our guest, Grayson. Dylan, let's take a reach into the mailbag. Always entertaining. This is an email we got from Remington. Remington says, "Hey guys, love the show. Started listening just before the Rona outbreak, and it's been a source of inspiration and laughs. I think I have listened to Dylan tell the story about how Max prank called him as a crew scheduler like 10 times. Max's uncontrolled laughing made me lose it. Keep up the amazing work, and I hope we're all back in the sky flying soon. Side note, in the OC layover guide, one of the recommendations is Barley Forge. Unfortunately, it is closed, but there are several great breweries right by it, such as Salty Bear, Gunwale, and Bootleggers Brewing. Thanks again for the great podcast." Well, somebody likes a good story, just like the rest of us.
Oh, man. It's funny because I read that when that email came in, and then I was like, I listened to that part again and relived those.
First officer,
a little bit.
I got some trips for you. And then we'll have to make those changes to the layover guide.
I actually already did, but here, you know, I was just thinking, unfortunately, in the time we're in right now, I think a lot of the layover guides are going to need to get updated, unfortunately, because I have a feeling there's going to be a lot of change in the restaurant industry. So
I don't know. You know, if we can, if everybody's allowed to go out and everybody in the restaurant business gets some of these stimulus checks to hang on. I don't know about you, but I am chomping at the bit to go out to a restaurant and a bar and just order a drink and have a nice dinner. And I've got to think that everybody else is in the same page.
I'm sure. So hopefully we won't have to make too many changes to the layover guides. You can find those on our website at 215podcast.com. We've got a bunch of good cities there and some cities you wouldn't expect too. So
yeah,
check those out. Got another email from Cliff. He said, guys, found out about your show on Pro Pilot World and have listened to several shows. Very well done. I'm a software sales guy and a CFII on the side at Sporties. Have gotten back into flying over the last year after 20 years off to raise kids and make money. Wanted to become an airline pilot back in the 90s, but at the time, Comair paid $12,500 per year to be an FO, and you had to buy your own type rating. Just could never bring myself to quit my cushy IBM job for that deal. Anyway, really enjoy the podcast and look forward to future listening. Best regards, Cliff. Man, I remember, see, you and I were just young enough to where we were flying with guys when we were at the regional airlines that had like gotten hired at during that time. Did you ever fly with guys that would tell you about that?
Yeah, I do remember some of that. And that must have been early 90s. And then when we got, I guess we were training in the 90s. We really didn't start at the airlines till
2000. Right, but I'm saying the 2000s we flew with.
Yeah.
On through that. I remember flying with a few guys that were like telling me like, oh man, I had 3,500 hours of flying, you know, bank checks in a Baron and finally got hired and had to pay for a type rating and 12,500. I mean,
most of the captains that I fly with now were those captains back when we were flying at the regionals.
Yeah.
You know, same guys, same genre. So they're some of those guys. Yeah. Talk about flying for the what's that Embraer, the Bondurante or something? turboprop? Mm-hmm. Flying the Bondurante down in San Marcos or whatever, you know, San Luis Obispo up and down the coast of California. Who knows? But everyone's got a story. Hopefully we're not headed back in the $12,500 a year by your type rating. Who knows? We got another one that was from Blam 1441, review. Fantastic show, entertaining and informative show that applies to every segment of the industry. Max and Dylan cover a number of topics in a way that's refreshing and laid back. I recommend it to all my pilot buddies. Well, I see you as laid back. I don't know about refreshing.
Sometimes refreshing. Our last review comes from Corporate Pilot. That's his name. That's his name on Apple Podcasts. I don't know how you just get Corporate Pilot. That's
old school.
That's cool. I like that.
You flew a Jetstar.
That's right. They say, love the show, guys. Great information for all of us pilots. Very entertaining. But dudes, please, you got to change that intro music.
That hurt.
I know.
I love our intro music.
Music right now. We love it so much.
Yeah, hit it. Drop that track.
I mean, it's kind of West Coast rap, Dr. Dre elements.
I know.
Some people don't like it. I don't know. If you guys, let us know. If you hate this music, I guess we'll look into something else. You can find us on the socials. It's at 215 Podcast. And let us know your thoughts.
We paid good money for the rights to that music, yeah, didn't we?
Did. Oh, up to, but not including $20, I believe. Certificate. Me on the wall.
Boom. It's the only certificate we have.
Yeah, exactly. Only license we got. Well, if you got something you want to say in the mailbag, you can email us info@215podcast.com. Yeah, let us know. If we need to change this music, we will. We'll compose something ourselves. I don't know. Anything's possible when we're quarantined at home with nothing else
to do. I'd like to see how many people head bob when that comes on. I know I always do. Gets me fired up.
I know. Well, on to the main event today, Max. A lot going on with retirement plans. It's a big part of why pilots in business aviation, I think, jump over to the airlines. It's a big chunk of the consideration, I think. At least recently, there were huge contributions from the company. A lot of major carriers, you'd see the contributions between, 14 and 20%? Direct.
Yeah, but the other thing I think a lot of people still don't understand is that that profit sharing check that everyone has been getting for quite some time, it also is a retirement contribution. It's a lot of times into a separate account, or it depends on how it's structured. But so you're looking at upwards of 25, pushing 30% of your salary per year that's going into retirement. And then you run that through compound interest calculator. That seems to be a sizable chunk at age 65 or however long you hold out till. So right now, I guess it'd be kind of interesting, Dylan, to talk about what spurred us to do this episode right now. And you see, we hear from people, pilots of all different ages, so all different stages of their career. We've heard some of our buddies that are, you know, right at 40 that are, oh my God, my 401k just got crushed. Mm-hmm. And we were talking, we're like, it's so irrelevant. You know, you should be thrilled and you should be trying to front load your purchase right now while things are, why everything's on sale. And then we've also talked about guys that are very near retirement that just got crushed and they're like, oh, my 401k. And you're like, dude, you know, maybe your money shouldn't have been in the stock market, all in the stock market at that stage of retirement, because you're looking at not growth, but more maintaining the wealth you've already grown over the years. So we thought, I mean, we're pilots, most of us, not financial guys. So we talked to somebody who knows.
Yeah, it had some great advice for us. I think the important takeaway for the younger people, and I know most of our listeners are younger, the big takeaway from this, pay attention when he talks about the fees and understanding some of that, because that right now is really the one thing that can get you. I think most people understand, yeah, I got to contribute to my 401k. But if you just pile it into the easiest possible fund, and we talk about those target retirement funds, there are ways that those can really slow you down in the long run. So a lot of good info, and hope you guys enjoy it. All right, Max, I got some really good advice on I was probably the first year that I was a professional pilot at the airlines. I was flying with this guy, and we were talking about the stock market and about money and stuff. And he looked at me and goes, I'm going to give you the most important piece of advice you're going to get in this career. And he said, never take financial advice from a pilot. And I always remember that. And it usually seems to work out pretty good. So, you know, we love to talk about financial stuff. Obviously, we're not experts, but we thought, why don't we bring an expert onto the show who can maybe answer some questions and kind of give some perspective for us. So today on the show, we've got Grayson Geiler joining us. He's the lead consultant from Secure Estate Solutions. It's a retirement planning and wealth management firm in Scottsdale, Arizona. Welcome to the program, Grayson.
Thanks for having me.
Grayson, can you just give us a little background on yourself?
Sure. I went to the University of Nebraska for finance, got cabin fever in Nebraska, and went out to, in the mid-90s, went to the commodity exchanges in Chicago. So that's really where I got kind of a sink or swim education on how financial markets work. Late 90s, I got licensed and moved down to Arizona here and started helping people prepare themselves for retirement.
Well, today we wanted to have a discussion just about retirement. You know, the market's been so crazy lately. We thought it'd be a good idea to kind of talk a little bit about what pilots should be doing and maybe considering when they're thinking about retirement. First, sure. I guess, let's just start off talking about the market. It's been so crazy for the last month. I imagine it's been a very relaxing time for you, right?
Oh, yeah. You know, just get up with my morning coffee and enjoy the day.
Okay. Well, first, I guess we should start with a disclaimer. This was recorded on April 8th. In the right. morning. So that's first off.
Okay. The worst thing for financial markets in general, and it doesn't even really matter what asset class we're talking about, just an asset class that people use as investment, the unknown is the worst. If you know what you're up against and can plan accordingly, it doesn't always have to be pretty. But if no one really has any idea what's going on, that's when panic hits. So, of course, you know, you're talking about mid-February, everything looked great. The market, it felt a little bit like the 2000 and 2007 time when, hey, everything goes up, everything's great. And panic hit pretty fast. So, you know, you're talking about 3,400 in the S&P down to 21 and change. And I think the lowest close was just over 22. So, you know, you're talking about on top of 30% in a month, which Guys, this was, by a lot of just statistical volatility measure terms, this set some new records. So now that it looks like things are taking a little bit better shape as far as what we're up against, you know, with China, some of the other areas, you've got Hong Kong, you've got South Korea that all went into it earlier than we did. Now starting to come out of it, it looks like there's a little bit of a light at the end of the tunnel, and the markets responded over the last few days very well. But again, overextending to the downside, the first bounce tends to get overextended as well. So we'll see.
Right. And we're just one bit of bad news away from another dip, right? Because the market just seems to be reacting so violently depending on what the day's news is.
And that's the thing. I mean, this thing is completely detached from economic reality right now. And we need to understand that. Look, everybody's sitting at home in their underwear with their hand out looking for government money. That's not an economy that's ready to, you know, just spring back into action and rocket to new all-time highs in a couple of months, right? This entire thing has been detached from economic reality, and the Federal Reserve is piling money into this thing. They're even talking about buying stocks, which, you know, I guess intuitively, it probably isn't a huge shocker. But a few years ago, people would have thought you should have foil on your head if you were talking about that. And you know, you've got $2+ trillion coming out of the federal government fiscally to try to keep the dream alive. So these are unprecedented times.
Truly. So a lot of times when people see a bunch of volatility in the market or a big pullback like this, they want to turn to gold. You know, you see Peter Schiff and everything's coming to an end and everyone should buy tons of gold, of course, from Peter Schiff Gold. But so what are your thoughts on precious metals and people investing in those right now or at all?
Yeah, well, and I guess I look at gold differently than Peter Schiff does. I mean, keep in mind, central banks all around the globe still hoard gold. So it is worth something. It always has been worth something. It always will be. But it's not in a situation in the modern economy that it's a true investment. I mean, how do you get a yield off of gold? I mean, there are some upstart companies that are trying to create gold as the currency of transactions where depositors could get some interest, but that's in its infancy. And, you know, we're a long, long way away from a situation where you're truly getting a lot of investment return off gold. So it's really, in my world, it's a disaster hedge. It's, look, I've got two little girls. If I have a pile of gold and there's any economy, the girls are not going to starve. That I know. So I think everyone should own some gold, but it should be hold in your hand, you know, gold eagles. As far as a majority of your portfolio, I don't subscribe to that. I think it's a disaster insurance, and I'm fine if I don't, in dollar terms, consistently make money on that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's an insurance policy in case everything else goes to hell. At least it's something that's always had intrinsic value that won't go away like many other things can. What about, and you're saying that actually physically own gold that you can?
Yeah. Well, so here's the problem. Yeah, there are a lot of guys out there that'll talk about, oh, you can own gold in your IRA, and they're advertising that simply because a lot of people's investable wealth is their IRA. So these guys want to get after that. The problem is, owning gold in your IRA, well, what did we just say is the biggest reason to have gold? If everything else goes to hell in a handbasket and gold is, you know, $10,000 an ounce, well, you just quadrupled your IRA value that somebody has to keep track of and is charging you fees on, and you owe taxes on all that gain. So you just handicapped
a big
portion of the whole point of owning gold. You know, you have to have a third party custodian if it's IRA money. If as an American, because, you know, the US dollar, it may have an entire another iteration of it's, people are worried that we're going to lose world reserve currency status, but it just isn't happening. So in dollar terms, gold isn't really rallying in Australian dollar terms, in British pound terms, in Japanese yen terms. You've seen new all-time highs in the price of gold recently. So for an American, if you do just feel like you have to have a hedge in your IRA with gold, you know, some of the gold mining stocks might be an option, but it is a little more speculative.
Another thing that people have always said, well, maintain intrinsic value as real estate. So is that an alternative if you just don't want to have gold in your house?
Oh yeah. I am a fan of real estate. Of course, you know, we have to throw caveats out there. I mean, keep in mind, broke municipalities and states can tax real estate as far as they want. Ask, you know, residential housing owners from Illinois how they feel about that as an investment. You know what I mean? It's gotten absolutely ridiculous in Illinois. Places out west that don't have the big property taxes, it can still be a great inflation hedge.
Sure. And like we said, too, gold sitting in your closet doesn't require any maintenance or taxes to be paid or HOAs or potential maintenance or vacancies if it's income property. So certainly something else to consider, right?
Yeah, that's a good. I mean, there are so many different types of real estate. Obviously, gold is a commodity, so there's only a few ways to own it. But in producing real estate, yeah, is a great inflation hedge. I have clients that have farmland back in the Midwest, and I rarely would I recommend someone sell that. Of course, everyone's situation is different because the producing real estate always has some value.
What about hoarding pork bellies from your time on the commodities market? Is that something you'd recommend?
The pork bellies did it too. Yeah, you need a big warehouse with refrigeration to do that.
it's interesting times. We're all thinking outside the box these days. So
yeah, there you go. There you go. Well,
let's shift gears a little bit and talk a little bit about retirement planning for pilots.
Sure.
First, why don't you give your disclaimers? We're not, you know, giving any advice right now.
Yeah, everyone's situation is so different. This is just broad and general. And so nothing can be taken as advice in an individual situation.
Right. Exactly. Well, let's start off. You know, we're pretty active on social media. We got a lot of the, you know, as you would expect, some of the younger pilots are on social media following us. And we've been seeing a lot of the younger pilots, 20s and 30s, complaining about, oh, their 401k has gone down so much. Oh, they're fretting about this. First of all, to me, this is ridiculous. But can you give some perspective for somebody in their 20s and 30s? Should they be worried about what's happening in the market right now with their retirement fund?
No, and I'll tell you what. So most of our clients are at least 40, and the majority of them even older than that. A lot of the younger clients that we do have are children of older clients that came into us. You know, a lot of times, if I was looking at someone in their 20s and 30s, they really don't need me. I honestly, many times I've said, okay, here's what I would do if I were you. Get this IRA or Roth IRA set up at Vanguard and just put your head down and pedal into the wind. Just keep spending less than you make. Keep investing. You get crazy pullbacks like this, and you do have to keep piling in. And I hate that blind, oh, buy the dips. But if you're 20 or 30, that is the mechanism that's going to be the best inflation hedge for you. Does that answer any question? If you're 20 or 30 something, chances are you don't really have an option to retire anytime
right.
reasonably soon. So you're really spinning your wheels worrying about, you know, the market movement or the portfolio value movement within month, even quarter to quarter. It gets past that and you may need to think about reallocation and stuff like that. But if you can't let yourself get crazy over the short term movements.
Right.
Yeah, you should look at it as an opportunity when there's a big pullback in the market. Is that how much more you're getting for your, you know, that percentage of your paycheck you invest every month?
Well, yeah, absolutely. And I'll tell you what, you know, when we talk about working years and putting in versus retirement years and taking out, the Great Wall of China should be between these two stages in investing life. the Great Wall of China. And I can just show, it's just, it's simple math. I can put it on a spreadsheet. You see the crazy volatility. Remember 2000, 2001, 2002. And then of course, everybody remembers 2008, even the 20 somethings will remember that. And now looking at this, if you are putting into a portfolio with that wicked volatility, it actually statistically helps you. If you are retired and taking out from that volatility, you decimate your portfolio.
I mean, I have a question.
It's 180 degree opposite. And it's just
sure. So right now there's been a big pullback in the market. We're kind of towards the beginning of the year. Would it make sense to try and contribute as much as you can to your 401k up to the IRS limit in the next, say, couple months?
Absolutely. And again, of course, everybody's situation is different. If you're 64 and thinking about retiring in December, that may not be the best idea. but for the vast majority of people, absolutely. And when we're talking about maximizing 401k contributions, let's talk about that for a minute here, because just look at a 401k as a company-sponsored IRA. And for most people, the core functionality of this is really the company match. Now, for some people, they really need the discipline of money coming out of their paycheck so they don't spend it. But if you're not one of those people, the only benefit of this 401k is the company match, unless, because the limits are higher, unless you're making a lot of money and you need tax deferral. Okay. So the big thing to understand when we're talking about, hey, should I max out my 401k pre-tax style? Should I add on an IRA or should I go Roth IRA? The big thing to understand is tax brackets. So if you're single, top of the 12% tax brackets, 50 grand in basically adjusted gross income, a little bit more, but If you're married, it's basically 100 grand. So if for whatever reason, most of the people listening to this are going to be making a little more than that, but if they're working part-time and you are in that 12% tax bracket, maxing out your 401k is not the right option. You want to contribute what they will match, of course, because that's free money. But past that, we should be contributing to Roth. We should be paying the 12% taxes so that later on in life, when we'll probably be in higher taxes, we'll be taking out of a Roth tax-free. And I don't want to get too many balls juggling in the air here, but the difference between an IRA or company 401k and a Roth is the Roth, you're paying taxes this year, but never again on any growth or anything. The IRA, you're not paying taxes on that money this year. You don't have to pay it until you pull money out. So the only differentiator between these two is tax rates. If the tax rates when you put in comparatively are the same as the tax rates when you're taken out, those two vehicles perform exactly the same way. The only difference is if you're paying lower taxes now than you're going to pay when you want to take the money out, you put into Roth now. If you're paying higher taxes now than you think you will when you're retired, you put into the 401k IRA. Does that help?
Yeah, except yeah. Only, this is the problem that happens to me every time when I go over this. They go, well, are you going to be in a higher tax bracket later when you retire? I'm like, God, I wish I knew.
Yeah, well, that's a great point. Dylan, that's a great point. And that's why I start with the 12% tax bracket. Because the big jump in our whole tax code is from 12 to 22%. So, Dylan, you're married, probably making more than $100,000. So you're already in the 22% tax bracket.
Right.
Now it's theoretical. Now it's a discussion. If you're in the 12% tax bracket, it's not a discussion. Matt, anything you can put into Roth, do it. Mm. If your company has a Roth 401k, do it. Now, even a Roth 401k, understand that the company contribution is going to be pre-tax, but that's okay. If you're in the 12% tax bracket, volunteer to pay 12 now. Past that, because we jump up to 22, now it's a discussion. 22 is probably still a pretty low tax rate, Dylan. You know, if Congress does nothing, which is kind of a fantasy of mine, but if Congress did nothing...
or a reality, depending on how you look at it, because they do nothing a lot of the time. But.
Right. Then when there's a sunset clause on these tax rates. In 2025, the 12% tax bracket goes back to 15. The 22% tax bracket goes back to 25. So if you're in the 22% tax bracket, I might tend towards Roth. And there's another reason why too. Because even if it's exactly the same, what you're paying now versus the tax rate that you'll pay when you retire, I still like to see clients have some flexibility in retirement between the tax classes of their savings. And let me give you an example why. So if you retire and let's say you're single and your Social Security plus maybe a pension puts you right about $50,000, right about the top of the 12% tax bracket, but everything you saved was an IRA. Well, you turn 72, the government says you're taking money out of that and you're going to pay taxes on it. And all of a sudden, you've just rocketed yourself into higher taxation. And it's bad. Everything you take out of that IRA is going to be at higher taxation. So people are, they're scrimping their lifestyle because their only savings is IRA. But if they take more out, it's going to be at the 24%, 29%, whatever their tax rate may be, and it makes them nuts. Well, if you had Roth IRA, you could take money out of that. And it doesn't, that a Roth IRA withdrawal doesn't even go on your tax return. You don't even have to report that.
Yeah.
So it's always nice to have some flexibility. If you're kind of on the fence, Roth or IRA, I tend to go Roth. But then, of course, there are the income limits on can you contribute to Roth. So everybody's situation is different. You got to look at that too.
Well, only on IRAs though, right? For Roth 401ks. If you have I guess you'd have to have a self-managed one or some sort of option. Those don't have the income limits that the IRA does, right?
That's correct. But not every company is going to have Roth availability. Most of them do now, but there's still some of them that don't. So look into that.
So let's tie up the discussion for the pilots that are getting started in their careers, you know, 20s and 30s. One thing that someone told me, and maybe you can explain this a little bit, you know, like we said, just pile money in there. You don't need to worry about the balance. It's going to go up. It's going to go down. You're not getting close to retirement. It doesn't matter yet. But what they did say is pay attention to the expense ratios that you're in, the funds you're in. And, you know, like when I first started out, I was in my 20s, I just said, let's see, what's the, you know, target fund, retire 2045 or whatever it was for me. Can you explain what an expense ratio is? Is that something that a 20 or 30 year old should pay attention to?
Absolutely. That's a good point. You know, there's only... The simplicity of it is an expense ratio is how much you're paying in fees represented as a percentage of what you have in the account. So let's say you have $1,000 in your 401k in a certain position or a certain fund, and the fund's expense ratio is 1%, well then you are paying that fund and the managers of that fund $10 a year for your money to be in there. A 1% of $1,000 is $10. So usually quarterly, that's going to be deducted from your account. Now, and you know, there are fees. I mean, if we're investing in funds and 401ks, there are fees, and we really need to pay attention to that. And it really gets important on the target date funds, because here the target dates, those funds started in the early 90s, and here's kind of the nuts and bolts of it. If let's say it's 2020, let's say you're 40 years old and you're going to retire at 65. So you go out, you're going to retire in the year 2045. Okay. Well, money management isn't what you do for a living. You fly planes. So when you look at all the investment options in the 401k, can you know, it starts to spin and it doesn't really make sense. So you look at, oh, retire 2045. Oh, well, I'll just put all my money in that. And the theory being, now you're 40, you're younger, so there's going to be more high-risk stocks, maybe some international stocks, growth-type stocks that are up and down. There will be very little of the corporate bonds and treasury bonds, the stuff that doesn't return much, but you don't get the volatility in price. There's very little of that in right now in that target date 2045 fund. So you're 40, you start piling into that. And as the years go on, you don't have to change funds. You don't have to change strategies. You don't have to do a whole lot of analysis. That target date 2045 fund will start to shift from the more aggressive portfolio gaining sort of strategy to more conservative maintained value. It'll shift from those biotech type stocks into treasuries as the years go on. So then by the time you're in 2042, just a few years out, the ratio of safe investments versus more aggressive investments is more like 70 safe, 75 safe, 25 or 30% growth. So that fund itself does the changing as the years go on. You don't have to do anything. You just keep piling into 2045. Well, that's very attractive. And I get that. You know, again, people, you know, whatever you're doing, you're a mailman, you're flying planes, you're an engineer. Money management isn't what you do for a living. And that's simple. So that's what I'm going to do. Well, guess what? That's where all the fees are in all these investment choices.
Ah, oh, man, right? I knew it.
So that expense ratio you're looking at on the top of this retired 2045 fund might be 1%, but they don't have to report to you all of the different funds that fund owns that have its own fund fees.
Should have known.
So looking at this and so the expense ratios in this industry are consistently coming down over the years. But I mean, fairly recently, I found a target fund. I'm not going to name the custodian of it, but I found a target fund that had three layers of funds owning funds owning funds. And the entire when you add up, and it can be a bear trying to find exactly where all these fees are. I got to 4% in fees, and then the 401k had its own fee. So we were over 4% in fees.
Jeez.
And you know that, I mean, in this day and age, just do the math. If in my example, you're 40 and you're going to retire in 25 years. 4% 25 times. I mean, the fees get ridiculous.
Wow. Yeah, that's a lot of money at the end of the day.
Gravy train. Why are we flying airplanes if we could be collecting 4%?
Yeah, right. And so, but you know, all the creators of these 401ks, they know that that's the attractive simplicity of it. Hey, I'm going to retire in 2045, so I'll just pile into that. And sadly, that's where the fees get pretty bad. All 401ks are going to have more fees than you would have just managing your own IRA, obviously. But the target date funds should be avoided. You've just got too much growth necessary between you and the market. You've got too many fees just to get, you need a certain growth just to get back to zero.
That's a good point.
So what about young guys that are struggling to pay off student loans, but also make contributions to their retirement funds and their income is lower because they're first starting out? Is there a suggestion you have for prioritizing your available funds towards paying down student loan faster and not contributing as much to retirement or vice versa?
Yeah. So first and foremost, the 401k, whatever the company will match, put it in. And it's staggering to me when I look at national statistics of 401ks and less than half of employees that have 401k availability are putting in. Less
free money, people. It's free money.
Free money. So let's talk about that just briefly. So if you wanted to save money on your own and you don't lack risk, you go and you put it in a CD, Wells Fargo is going to pay you 1% a year. You could shop at maybe 1.25%. I don't know. They're going to pay you 1% a year. Or you could put money into your 401k. Let's not talk about the tax advantages of it right now. You put money in your 401k and you make 100% overnight. 1% a year or 1% overnight. Like it's
so no 100% overnight.
100% overnight. Sorry.
He's referring to the company match, right? Is that what you're?
The company match, whatever they'll match. And so typically a lot of companies will match 100% of the first 3% and maybe 50% of the next 2% is a typical ratio.
Well, let us tell you some of the secrets of the airline industry. The dirty secrets of the you need to contribute 0% and the company gives you 15 to 18% for the major airlines is how it works.
Well, that's phenomenal. But anything that can be matched, put it in. That's requirement number one for the 20s and 30s somethings. As far as student loans, and you guys probably saw part of this, the government trying to save us here. The interest rate on student loans has been pinned to zero, and they're saying for at least 2 months. Look, if I were 20 or 30 something and I had student loans, I would get on a payment plan. They'll amortize it out 25 or 30 years. I would get on a payment plan that just has this scheduled to go to zero at some point, and I would pay that minimum every month, and I would not pay any more. Some people hate a debt hanging over top of them, but just reading the tea leaves, this student debt, you know, almost 30% of it is non-performing, and that's a statistic from way before this coronavirus. The government, at some point, there's going to be a debt jubilee, meaning at some point, the government, who owns about $1.2 trillion of the outstanding $1.5 trillion student loans, they're going to take an eraser to it. It's only a matter of time. Now, there may be means testing, which means if you're diligent and you make a lot of money, if we don't erase your debt, you have to keep paying. That may be the case. They may have to erase all of it. I don't know. But if I owed all that money, I wouldn't be overly excited to pay down that debt that might get erased. I'd make sure that I pay the minimum, because you don't want that. You don't want the juice running and you borrowed 40 grand and now it's 80. Mm-hmm. But I would get that amortized, and all the servicers of this debt, I'll figure out an amortization program for you. Amortized means you make the same dollar payment for a specific amount of time and the debt will end up zero. So get it amortized as long out, 25, 30 years, as long as they'll go, smallest payment they'll go that's actually paying this off. And make that minimum payment. The rest needs to be invested, kind of as we're discussing. Is that answering your question?
Absolutely. Yep. No, I think that's great. I mean, just judging from watching all of the presidential candidates that continue to run every 4 years, somebody's always pitching that they're going to forgive all the loans. So eventually one of those guys or girls is probably going to get elected.
I agree. But it scares me, because people don't seem to understand that debt, your debt or any company's debt, is an asset on somebody else's balance sheet. Right. So you don't just go around erasing debt and everything's okay. Right. The banana republics in Central America have tried that over and over and over. The for a Bernie Sanders to say, well, I'm going to wipe out $1.5 trillion in debt. It doesn't work that way, because a lot of government programs are using the payment
that interest
from those interest payments, those amortized payments that I'm talking about. They're using that as their budget. So erase that. Bernie, of course, you're trying to get votes and you want everybody to vote for you because you're going to make their debt zero. Well, there's another side that we haven't discussed yet. And that's how the people who use it as their asset, their income, what are we going to do with them? But that, you know, even that being said, at some point they're going to start to look, they turned the interest rate to zero on it. So it is debt that isn't as daunting to me. Like if somebody had credit card debt, I'll get that paid off way before student loan debt.
Yeah. Well, the problem too is that now it de-incentivizes people to save for their kids' college, because if they're just going to wipe out the debt, why would you, you know, pull your lifestyle back? And so for guys just like all of us that have young kids, it's just like, is this just a waste of money now to be saving for your kids' college? As horrible as that seems, it's like, am I being penalized for being socially responsible or fiscally responsible? But that's another show.
Yeah, it's a little crazy.
All right. Well, let's take a look now at guys kind of like Max and I, who are kind of mid-career now. We've realized that we need to contribute to that 401k. We've got it. We're growing that 401k. Now, all of a sudden, especially at some of the larger custodians, I guess is what you call them, those offers that you get from your 401k custodian that say, hey, we can upsell you into a professional management service, or that's like a professional option. Is that something worth doing, or what do you have any thoughts?
Not a fan of it. I've never seen one of those setups be a whole lot more than a 20-minute interview with you, and then they charge you fees. They're just adding a fee, and it's typically 0.5%. But they'll have a discussion with you on, and they'll of course get your age, your income, your expenses, and your risk tolerance, and then they'll put that into their computer models, and it'll spit out how your funds should be invested, and that's probably about all they're going to do for you. I would not recommend that.
What a surprise! Yeah, it's what a great business to be in, though.
Well, yeah, and I'll tell you what. I mean, we have a situation with a lot of times our clients will refer kids to us. I'll take a look at a kid's portfolio and tell them what to do for free. You know, because I already know their situation. Their parents are clients. You know, maybe you don't have an advisor that they can look at a whole picture for you. Mm-hmm. Find one, but they shouldn't be charging for your 401k. That's the person that can help you with making sure your insurances are set up properly, making sure, you know, all the stuff that we're talking about. There's a lot of other stuff that they can do for you. They should be helping you with your 401k for free.
I gotcha. Now, another problem that we run into, so now, like we kind of mentioned before, maybe we're in that middle of our career, we're starting to get some income, and we can't contribute to that Roth anymore because we're making too much money.
Yep.
What should we do now?
Well, some 401ks have an option where you can just have a non-deductible contribution stay in your 401k, so basically a non-qualified, they'll call it. And at a later date, that money coming out of the 401k can be rolled into a Roth. So look into that. Obviously, it's a giant backdoor is kind of the industry nickname for it. IRS hasn't closed that. Still may be available in your 401k, but you got to check into it. This is a broad guess. It's not like I'm doing a poll of 401ks, but I would say it's probably 30 or 40% of 401ks you could do that. Well, so that's one option. Flat out contributing to a Roth, again, we have the income limits. But if you still want to invest, that's the money that should non-qualified after-tax money. Just open up a Schwab, TD Ameritrade account, something like that. Invest on your own and familiarize yourself with the tax advantages of stock ownership with after-tax non-qualified money. Not as good as Roth, but you guys can't contribute to Roth. So,
Like I mentioned before, you should never take financial advice from a pilot. But just from my experience at the airlines, you're flying with new pilots all the time. They're always telling you, oh, this stock, I love this. Or they get on YouTube and you're always getting advice on what you should buy. And let's say that I'm somebody, I've got a little bit of disposable income. I want to play around and buy a few stocks, maybe set, you know, $10,000 bucks for fun. Should I use my 401k? No. Money to do that, or should I be doing that in a different type of an account?
Yeah, you need to do that in a different account. 401ks just are not built for in and out sort of trading. They're just not. So you need to make sure that you have a Schwab, TD Ameritrade, whatever it is, and put those ideas in there. Ideally, you would do it in Roth money because you can buy and sell Roth without any concern for the tax consequences of doing so. But if you don't have Roth, the after-tax money, just be aware of all the different taxation of what you're doing can happen. And that's I would highly recommend that over trying to do that in a 401k.
What if you're in a fortunate spot where you've been working at a major airline for 12 years, and so you're topped out on the captain pay and you're doing pretty well? So a lot of times what happens with those guys is that they will meet the IRS maximum for company contribution to their 401k. So yep. Then they'll just get a big check of that extra. What's the best thing to do with that extra money that you're no longer able to contribute, or the company isn't able to contribute for you?
Well, again, I mean, that's where TD Ameritrade Schwab kind of account you can open up, and depending on your income tax situation, how much you contributed to the 401k, you may or may not be able to have tax deductible IRA contribution. Of course, in a situation like that, it'd be better if it was tax deductible if you're making that much money, but it may have to be just a non-qualified account. And from there, be aware of, you know, the tax advantages of dividend income versus interest income. Be aware of the tax advantages of long-term capital gains versus short-term, stuff like that.
Okay. That's weird. I thought you were going to recommend buying either a brand new RV or boat with that money.
Well, I was thinking Tesla, but apparently they're backlogged.
So. Any sort of rapidly depreciating asset which should be invested in immediately with that kind of money.
Even the only better is to go in on a boat with somebody else, take a plane.
Buy your own airplane. That's what a lot of pilots do at that stage. They say, well, it's time to get a Bonanza.
Well, the funniest part about it is I have a client, a younger pilot client, and if he's listening to this, he'll know I'm talking about him. He broke his arm. So he had just bought a boat and it's parked off San Diego, or actually it's up in LA, I think. But he was thinking, man, I broke my arm, so I'm on disability. Maybe I should sell this boat. No. Not with this coronavirus going on. They're bid 20 cents on the dollar right now. Oh, don't do it.
Yeah. Well, and if you can't afford the boat you really want, then just get a home equity line of credit to close that gap, right?
Yeah.
That's right. Borrow. The Fed will forgive you.
Yeah, right. That's what we've learned. One last question for us. You know, something that I started doing, I hope this is a good idea. I do the healthcare plan that has the
HSA.
The HSA. So I max that HSA and have started investing those funds. And I've heard that's
good.
Kind of a nice little backdoor. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah. So the big thing is, and you have to have a high deductible insurance plan. So for some people, it doesn't really work. If it does work for you, they're great. Okay. So I think the maximum for an individual is like $3,400 a year. I think it's 7,000, something like that. For a family. But so what you do is tax deductible, just like an IRA contribution, and you pile it into that HSA. And theoretically, you have to use that money for the qualified medical expenses. And Google it, right? Because if you Google it, it has to be right. Yeah. Google what those medical expenses are. And so if you use it for those, you never have to pay taxes on this money. Now, so here's the bad news. You pile into that, you're maxing it out. You need to make sure it's investable as well, because right. This is a long-term strategy. And some of these HSAs, you're putting it at a, you know, at a credit union getting 0.3% or whatever. So make sure it's investable. If it is, just make sure you're not going to need this money, because if you take it out before age 65 and it's not for medical expenses, you just want to go buy your Tesla, you're going to have to pay taxes on it, ordinary income taxes on it, but they're also going to slap you with a 20% penalty.
Ooh.
Right. So you're going to take a beating. The flip side of that coin, though, is you get to 65 and you haven't spent any of this and you don't want to wait to spend it on medical expenses. You can take it out after 65 and you only pay ordinary income taxes, just like it's IRA.
Yeah. That's kind of my plan, because that's what works with my HSA, because I can go in and invest in funds and do all this stuff. So I've got a little percentage of it doing that. And that's kind of my plan.
Yeah, it's a good strategy. If you have if you have the wherewithal to do it. If you're not, if you're confident you're not going to get pressed into a corner and have to take it out to, you know, send your kids to the dentist or whatever.
But you can always just sell, like if you're invested in a fund, you can just sell that fund and then liquidate that and use that cash to do that.
Sure.
Right.
Sure. But I guess I'm saying for, I should have come up with an example, you know, buy your kid a car.
Right, right, right.
That's that you're going to take the, that you're going to take the penalty. Yeah.
Right.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Kind of an HSAs are cool. Yeah. HSAs are cool if you've got the right health plan for you. And you're not doing it just for a health plan that might not be good for you. And if you've got some wherewithals, you're not going to get pressed into liquidating it in bad circumstances.
Cool. Well, now let's go to the final stage when you're in your sunsetting years between, say, 60 to 65, you know, given the mandatory retirement is age 65 for airline pilots. And we'll just assume that's around the same age for corporate pilots and everybody else. How do you recommend people change their strategies as they get closer to retirement and, you know, they see that kind of light at the end of the tunnel?
Yeah. So, and this is a real wake up. Just the last 2 months have been a real wake up call for people because you, probably everyone listening to this podcast knows someone that was excited about retiring in 2006 and 2007. Mm-hmm. But didn't end up retiring till 2014 or whatever the right. the case. I mean, it's if you've got retirement in the crosshairs, you need to start planning for it. Things have changed a lot. Volatility in these markets has gotten just so absurd that if you don't plan for it, you may end up having to work longer than you want. And obviously that's a challenge for a pilot. So it's really a function of really making sure that you've got mapped out your different tax statuses of money and then coordinating properly between IRA, Roth IRA, after-tax money, coordinating properly the safe investments versus the volatile, more, you know, the stock market investments, the risk-based investments. And that's a whole analysis for everyone's individual situation. It requires a whole analysis.
Sure. I think the important thing to always remember once you get to that stage is pigs get rich and hogs get slaughtered. So don't be too greedy trying to get those gains in the last few years, right? Because you might find yourself in a position, I'm sure quite a few people have found themselves in now. What if you just watched, you know, you're 12 or 24 months or getting really close to that retirement age and you just watched half your portfolio get smoked because you're totally vested in the stock market and too aggressive.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now what?
That's an interesting now what. And we've had some people that we had just met over the last couple of months coming in kind of worried about that sort of thing. And again, we'll say you have to get to a point where, and here's a real key. This would be reasonably easy, I think, for all the listeners. Map out what your have to pay bills are going to be in retirement, meaning if you have a mortgage still, you know, keep the lights on, keep the insurance paid, keep yourself fed, the have to pays. And we have to figure out how to get guaranteed income to cover that. Meaning, and guaranteed income isn't, well, I've got this great dividend portfolio. Because, I mean, you rewind to 2009 and S&P 500, big stocks, the big companies, the average dividend was cut by around 30%. So dividend income is not the guaranteed income that I'm talking about. I'm talking about a pension. I'm talking about Social Security, or I'm talking about annuity payments from an insurance company. Those are the legitimate guaranteed incomes. So if we're 12 to 24 months from our retirement, we need to start thinking about that. How do I make sure that I've got guaranteed income to pay the have to bills and then organize the rest of the investments, you know, for emergencies and safe stuff and fun stuff, you know, give to the grandkids kind of stuff. But that would be a good step one for people that are that are staring at retirement that have seen their portfolio get whacked pretty well. Okay. And if we have to do some liquidation of a portfolio on this market bounce, because we're that worried that this might roll back over, the IRA money is where we should be looking at, okay, let's secure this and get this in some safe investments that don't have market risk.
Hmm. So, I mean, it sounds like this is the most complicated time. Obviously, there's just so many factors to consider. And this is kind of the time where bringing in professionals to assist kind of makes the most sense, right? I mean,
oh, without a doubt.
So without a doubt. So if I'm going to retire in 5 years, do I start working on this? Obviously, every case will be different, but is this something, okay, 2 years out, that's when I start assembling the team, or does it take longer, or do you have any thoughts on the timeline?
Well, the timeline as far as the mentality and how I'm investing and how I'm looking forward, 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, just spend less than you make.
Right.
I mean, there's some plan. I mean, we've talked about some plans when you know, you're making significantly more money than you're spending in your 40s and 50s. But that's for the most part. When you're 5 years out, within the matrix that you have, maybe start to pull back a little risk. When you're a year from retirement, it's very important to sit down with somebody who knows what they're doing to plan, because taxation, just a tax efficiency planning in retirement can make all the difference in the world. You could have someone that really doesn't have that much money, but as long as they're efficient and get their ducks in a row, like I was talking about with respect to the tax status of their savings and matching that up properly with the investment vehicle. If you can start getting that organized a year in front of your retirement date, it's really important. You need to, if you're going to retire this January 1, 2021, the taxation and what you're doing in 2020 could have a big effect on that. So you need to get after that right now.
It's good to think about. It's funny because you've been doing something for 20, 30, 40 years in one mindset of, you know, saving, putting away, doing all this stuff. And then you go to immediately shift gears. And it, I know for a lot of folks, it's probably not something they've been thinking a lot about. So,
well, especially when the market's been performing so well in recent times, it's got to be really hard for people to pull their money off the table. But this is exactly the example of why you have to do that. And everybody now, when when it doesn't matter, because you're just going to keep contributing and go through this, remember these times when you get to that stage, because this could happen to you and you don't want to have worked all those years and saved all that money to then watch a lot of it vanish right before you actually need to start dipping into it.
Yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, even for someone that isn't super close to retirement, but maybe reasonably close, 4, 5, 6 years. This is a good, even if this market does just kind of rebound and set sail for new highs, this is still a good reminder, right? Because when you get a 1 month pullback of 30%, that should rattle your cage if you're thinking about retiring anytime soon. So that's a good, it's a good reminder. There are some good, safe investments out there.
That's what you got to pay the extra fees for to find.
That's right.
$99. It's a PayPal. And
good news is too, for pilots, is that the 401k for airline pilots, I guess I should say, is that the 401k is such a generous company contribution compared to the rest of the world. Plus on top of that, a lot of people are getting profit sharing that, at least where I work, on average been 10% a year for ever. And so
not this year.
It's a lot. Yeah. No kidding. Not this year. It's a lot of money that is being given to you. And sometimes it behooves you to then think about the management of that money, because its effectiveness, once you get it all, can be diminished in fees and market risk and everything else at the wrong time. So think about that, pilots.
That's right.
Absolutely. And if you still have a few years yet, my advice to everyone is to not have your mortgage in retirement. To try to plan out that guaranteed income I'm talking about and you still have a mortgage, that's a problem.
That's a problem too, because I think it's so easy in this day and age when you're talking to people and people love to share the rate that they're getting. And then people go, oh, well, it's a great time to refinance. And then they refinance and they keep moving the goalposts because, yeah, you're getting that great lower rate. But, oh, yeah, you're resetting the amortization schedule another 30 years. So, like,
the
rate keeps front loading, right?
Yeah. So it just seems like you got to be careful doing that.
No, I agree. And rates are whipping around crazy right now. You know, if you've tried to refi a mortgage, you may be familiar with that. But I'm not a huge fan of, oh, I have to get the mortgage paid off now, but I certainly want it paid off before retirement. And do not listen to anyone that talks about how paying your mortgage off is such a horrible idea. Because those guys made a lot of money in 2006. And by 2010 and 11 and 12, there were a lot of miserable people that listened to
them. Hey, no kidding. Hey, that's the important thing is it's like, it's funny because we keep going back to this. It's like, you just got to learn the lessons, you know, they kind of keep repeating themselves. So,
yeah. Right. Yeah. And if you ever get that feeling that why would I ever do any safe investment when I can make a risk-free 15% of the stock market every year? Yeah, you know there's a problem.
Yeah, that's Max and I have a good index that we use is when people that we know that used to be bartenders and that kind of stuff start selling mortgages, and
there's your sign. Well, and that thing is, you know, the last big recession, there were some people that saw signs of what was coming and made some plays and did pretty well and wrote some books about it and so forth. But this one, you can certainly say, nobody saw it coming. There's no way to predict a pandemic and the ramifications that
true black swan event,
you know, before it was truly an unhealthy, you know, mortgage market and real estate market and everything. But now it's just completely out of the blue. So these are the things that you have to hedge your risk based on.
Yep. They can still happen. And it matters a lot more to someone who's staring at retirement rather than someone, you know, in the middle of their career.
All right, Grayson. Well, I think that covers just about all that we want to talk about. Obviously, this just kind of scratches the surface, but hopefully it just gets pilots thinking, especially the guys in the younger generation. Hey, you know, just start piling it in. You don't have to worry about it. And then the thing I took away from this, you know, is, man, when I'm getting close, there's a lot of balls in the air. It definitely sounds like getting a professional involved to help you out is the way to go once you're getting close.
Absolutely.
Well, Grayson, if folks want to get a hold of you, how could they do that?
So Grayson, Greyson, at sesweb.net or call 800-345-3155. And we're adamant that we don't charge for meetings or charge for planning. We want to work with people that want to work with us. So it's always a no obligation consultation if somebody wants to sit down and go through their situation.
We appreciate that. Appreciate your time. And then we'll get you out of here on this. Can you let us know when exactly the Dow will get it back up to 29,000?
Okay, so here's what happens. We're going to roll back over, and then there's going to be a big monkey on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange ringing a bell. And that means that the low's in, and it's time to buy. Oh, perfect. So wait for that.
Hold your breath, ladies and gentlemen.
That's right.
Awesome. All right, Grayson. Well, thank you so much for your time. Appreciate it, man.
Hey, thanks a lot, guys.
All right. Well, that was a great discussion with our friend Grayson Geiler at Secure Estate Solutions. I know I learned something. We hope you guys did too.
Well, we couldn't hold out any longer. The people kept demanding an update from Ted. And Ted in quarantine is a special type of
a real treat. So, real ray of sunshine.
Let's jump right over to that call.
Yeah.
What's up?
What's going on, T?
I'm driving to the grocery store right now.
Oh, hazard suit?
Did you bring your face mask?
I'm ready to get infected.
Well, it's probably the multiple hours in the airline terminal you've been spending for the last month that'll get you.
Yeah, that or my wife is a nurse.
One way or another.
Oh boy.
Or this massive
real estate household over at my place.
Or this nightmare remodel you're going through. One of those things is going to off you.
Perfect timing. In the middle of a remodel.
Yeah, stress can be very tough on your immune system.
That's right.
Well, we just wanted to call you and have a little chat. Do you have time now, or should we call you later after you're at the store?
I got plenty of time.
You got nothing to do.
Real busy day. Just full cat dad. That's about it.
So I talked to you the other day. You had to commute to O'Hare. How long did you have to sit in O'Hare to wait for your trip? How's commuting going?
To be able to get to my trip, I had to go to O'Hare 12 hours early before sign in.
Oh, what did you do?
I took a nap, listened to some complaint about something with their monthly bid or something in the crew lounge, then took a couple walks.
Burrito Beach?
Yeah, hit Burrito Beach.
Is that still there?
Breakfast burrito, yeah.
Wait, did you commute in full uniform and then wear the tie the whole 12 hours till you're signing?
I loosened the tie up, but when I was in the crew lounge, but not in public, though.
Not in public view.
That's dedication, though. Wow.
Because yeah. I have a feeling you're one of the guys that sleeps on the recliner and then uses the tie as the little eye shield to sleep.
The eye mask.
That's a good technique.
I used to with the zip tie.
That's experience, strategy.
I really want to know when I'm laying in that chair how badly I'm snoring, because you know you can't hear yourself snore.
Yeah, right. So Ted, you were actually looking pretty close to upgraded to captain, right?
Yeah, I could have held it, but I would have been bottom of the barrel. So commuting to reserve is not ideal. So
yeah, ever.
Yeah. My wife still likes me a little bit. So she still wants to see me more than 10 days a month.
God, that's weird.
I miss that camaraderie in the crash pad though.
I see you twice a year. That's enough for me.
Yeah. That's a good point.
So we've been doing these episodes, Ted, where everyone tells funny stories, and it made me think about, you know, we were all flight instructors back at Embry-Riddle in the day, and there was an award that was given out to instructors. It was called the Ted Safety Vigilance and Awareness Award that we used to give out in your honor. And I was wondering if you could tell the listeners the story of how that award came to be.
I think there was a couple stories that caused that, but not all of them are appropriate to be told. But the one about, I think we actually even gave this to like the chief pilot too.
We did.
But I was doing a nighttime VFR cross country from Prescott down to Tucson, and you had to overfly Phoenix Class B. And I think we would go down like 10-5, come back 11-5 or something like that. So you stay out of their airspace, but we would always get flight following on the way down and way down and the way back. We were on our way back. We had gotten Albuquerque gave us the Phoenix approach, and then approach refused to hand us off to back to Albuquerque once we passed their airspace. And I got pissed off about it. And my student, who had never held before ever, I told him, like, hey, you want to go learn how to hold for the first time? And I decided we were going to go to Bruiser Intersection, which there's an arrival from the north for Phoenix called the Bruiser One Arrival. And all the airliners come in and cross Bruiser at 12,000. So what me and my student did was, since I was so pissed off, and my student had no idea what was going on, and we just went and held at Bruiser at 11,500. And all you could hear on the radio was Phoenix approach vectoring every Southwest 10 airplane 20 degrees left or right of Bruiser because we were there holding.
And how long did you hold for?
We did, I don't know, like 4 or 5 circles.
You know, 172, that takes a while.
That takes a while on 172.
Time turn twist.
Yeah.
That's the best, dude. Your student probably had no clue. He's like, oh, that took me a minute 20 on the inbound leg. I got to cut that short.
I need to bracket a little bit better on that.
We were probably just doing circles. We weren't even probably doing like real things.
Your dude turns around a point.
Oh my God.
The cactus was going left and southwest was going right. And it's like late at night and the purse controller is just pissed. It's like, southwest, you got VFR traffic at your 12 o'clock turn right 20 degrees.
I don't know what he's
doing. I appreciate that you were at an appropriate VFR altitude though at 11,500.
Well, I mean, it's been a while. You know, I'm just an airline pilot now. I've dumped all that aeronautical knowledge, but I think that's like some airspace that keeps me out of B and then also out of, you know, I can do whatever I want in that airspace.
I would love to see the flip side of that now while you're coming in the Airbus and then there's some VFR guy on the arrival. I feel like.
No, are you kidding me? He'd love it because he's getting overpay, overfly.
Yeah, overblock.
He'll go back to me all you want.
Unless I was trying to catch my commute home.
But then your commute's not going to be for another 7 hours.
So. Yeah, don't worry. Now you're gonna have to spend the night because they've cut all those late night flights and all the early. Is that why you got screwed on your commute? Because they've cut all the early morning flights and all the evening flights?
Normally there's like five or six by multiple airlines. And now it's like they each run like one a day.
Yeah, commuting has just got to be horrible. It was horrible. Now what is it?
It's like 50-50 getting to work, or you got to go in the day before, and it's still like 50-50. I don't know. At this point, though, I don't even care. I might get there.
That's actually the first time I've heard you have a good attitude.
Yeah.
That's good.
It's positive.
Good for you, Ted.
Yeah.
He's just out there. He's just trying to flatten the curve. He's just trying to do his part.
Yeah. You know,
staying positive in these tough times. That's what you do, right?
That's right.
I just
keep putting one foot in front of the other. I like that.
Ted, now we have officially released your Straight Talk with Ted shirt, and it just says on the back of it, aviation is fine.
That's about as much as I would want to say about it.
That sums it up, huh?
That is about it. It's fine.
Now, are you starting to get ready to go to battle here on impossible contract negotiations, furloughs? Like, is this getting your juices flowing?
When I was a younger man, yeah. But now it's just too many other things are on the plate to really get too far into it. But I would not vote for any type of pay cut. I think we all know that's true.
Yeah.
Because they're going to take it anyways in a bankruptcy. So why would I give it to them before? They're just going to take it. Just might as well let the courts figure it all out.
Is it true or false? When you pick it, it's more effective if airline pilots have mustaches.
When you pick it, oh, you have the mustache? Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right? I think.
I would say even like stretch the lines a little bit, even bring it down a little bit of a handlebar just to, you know.
Because it kind of looks like
a off a chief pilot. Yeah.
Just to show management. You mean business?
Who's really in charge? That's right.
Yep. Just so you can show how disgruntled you are.
Well, it's going to be an interesting 12 months, Ted. But fortunately, you'll be here to guide us and our listeners through. You know, we've been getting more and more demands to. A lot of people have been worried about you. Kind of just want to know.
I'm alive.
Yeah. Know how you're doing. So.
I'm alive, living in a 500 square foot apartment with my wife's two cats. So life is great.
And your wife too, right?
She's there as well.
Or did she leave already? All right, good. Hey, Ted, I have one more question. Are you considering taking any sort of those paid leave offers?
I would if I wasn't a little bit leveraged at the moment with the home renovation and such. I wish, though. Pretty jealous. It's pretty depressing out there.
That's the thing. I just can't imagine going on these trips and then you get to the hotel. There's one floor open, no meal service. What most of these hotels Dude. Have one or two people working?
I was in my favorite place, Orlando, last week, and it was I forget what hotel it was. It was a Renaissance, but they had laid off every single employee and there was three managers keeping the place open and they had like two floors open just for crew members. Cause that was the only people staying there. I went downstairs to get a coffee cause they take the coffee makers out of the rooms now and went down to get a coffee. And it was literally like the GM, the hotel that went and served me my coffee.
Jeez.
And he's like, hey, you want breakfast? I'm like, yeah, what do you got? He's like, I got some scrambled eggs and and some bacon. I'm like, sweet, how much? He's like, you $5. I'm like, this seems weird. And then he came, he like left and came back like 3 minutes later with like eggs and a breakfast. I was like,
hey, sir, do you have a food handler's card? Did you make those? Or
he's like, I'm the regional manager of Marriott in the Southeast.
Hold on, I'm gonna make your eggs and then I'm gonna negotiate a purchase contract here.
Right.
The good news is the pools are all closed, so you don't have to worry about any more of those captains going shirtless.
Yeah, Paul isn't out there with shirtless again. Yeah. Orlando. I think it was Orlando, wasn't it? Last time we spoke to you.
That's a win for everyone.
It is pretty. And then
is keeping Paul from the pool.
Nobody on the plane. There's nobody in the terminal. It is depressing.
There are no kids. You were complaining about kids coming up in the jetway. Now it's the opposite. I don't know what's going to make you happy.
I had a 5-day trip canceled this week, and I'm stuck at home, and there is nothing to do. It's almost like you're screwed either way. My work sucks, and then coming home is so boring. You know how bad it is? You know how bad it is? I talk to my mom like 3-4 times a week. That's how bored I am.
Yeah, that's just because.
Hey, Mom, what's new? Nothing. What about you? Nothing.
What
she just FedExed us 3 puzzles from her puzzle hoarding cabinet and sent us some puzzles to do.
Well, at desperate times, we will get through this though. Keep your chin up, I guess.
Yep.
That's all you can do. All right, Ted. We will talk to you later.
Teddy Wonderland. Always a pleasure.
All right, see ya.
Later. Our first sale from the merch store on Fit to Fly's website of our shirts. We want to give a shout out to our listener, Grant, who was the first one to purchase the shirt. So thanks for your support, Grant, and everybody else that's purchased shirts from our merch store. Of course, you can find the link on our website. And thanks to our friends over at Fit to Fly that are hosting our store.
We are going to be rich. This is phase 2 of the master plan. And then when we finally sell enough t-shirts, what airplane are we going to buy with the proceeds?
I don't know. Eclipse Jet or a Murphy Moose or a Bearhawk.
Murphy Moose.
Or a Super Stole Highlander or a Super Cub, Carbon Cub. Should I keep going?
It sounds like you've been putting some thought into this. So.
Harman Rocket.
Ooh. We'll have to tell the story of the time we went and flew the Mooney rocket.
Oh, when we popped the tire? Or the tire exploded? However you want to...
We'll save that for another
time. Yeah, we'll save that. It's always fun in an airplane that has about 5 inches of prop clearance.
Gosh. Well, I think that's going to do it for another episode. Certainly appreciate everybody...
Certainly appreciate everybody. I mean, me too.
Yeah.
A special thanks to Grayson for coming on the show and the interview. And you know who we always leave out? Thanks to Ted. Thanks for taking time out of your busy day to enlighten our listeners with all of your banter and generally uplifting talk.
Of course, thanks to our friends at Harvey Watt for their sponsorship. More information at harveywatt.com for all the coverages they provide to professional pilots. And thanks to all our listeners for tuning in. We've been it's been a good year so far, and we really appreciate all the support, and we're looking forward to a lot more great content coming. So,
but until then,
remember, flexibility is the key to air power.
Peace out.
Black God.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the 21.5 podcast. Hang on. I said podcast.